The first obvious thing that we think about when we want to improve learning is to think about what can we fix inside of the schools. I think the next step, can we take maybe learning as a more holistic approach, thinking about learning as maybe not just one agent's responsibility, but maybe in a broader perspective.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In developing countries, more than 9 out of 10 children of primary school age are now in formal education. That's an amazing achievement, but how can we best support their learning? An experiment in India targeted both the times the kids are in school and the times they're not. Martina Björkman-Nyquist of the Stockholm School of Economics is one of the researchers, and she joins me now to give us an insight into what works and what doesn't. Martina, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you very much, Tim. Very happy to be here.
That 90% figure for enrollment, it's great news for the quantity of education, which is, of course, what we tend to measure. But are people worried about the quality of that education?
Let me take a little bit of a step back. At some point in time, a few decades ago, enrollment was very low. And then, you know, we put a lot of emphasis at that point through the Millennium Development Goals on increasing enrollment and doing research on how to increase enrollment. And we achieved that, as you said. Today, we have almost universal enrollment in low and middle income countries. And that's amazing. However, we want kids to be in school, but we are assuming that kids are learning when they're in school. Unfortunately, this hasn't been mirrored by improvements in learning. So even if we have almost universal enrollment, kids are remaining far below what we expect them to do. So I'm going to give you an example from India, where we are studying. So in India, there's almost close to 100% of all kids in grades 6 to 14 who are enrolled in primary schools. However, when you test the kids, you see that the share of children in grade 5 that can read at the level of grade 2 or solve math problems at the level of grade 2 is way below 50%. If we see changes, the progress is very slow. So clearly, yes, there are concerns about the quality of education.
Do we know the reasons why quality hasn't improved at the same time as quantity?
There are many possible reasons for why kids are not learning when they're in school. And if we start just to think about a drastic improvement in enrollment over just a couple of decades and almost one, I think we all understand that the public system needs to be upgraded drastically to kind of keep up with that huge increase in enrollment. So we need more teachers, we need more schools, we need more classrooms, and so on. And that hasn't happened. And you know, today there's in many of these low-income countries, there are overcrowded classrooms. Teachers are under-equipped to serve this huge number of students. But in many countries, like India, for example, there's maybe another problem as well. And that is that the school system is such that we have automatic progression. So a kid is progressing to the next grade independently on whether they have passed the requirement for that grade. That also makes the heterogeneity within a class huge. And that creates challenges for teachers to, you know, teach this huge heterogeneous level of students, some who maybe can't read and write, and some who are at the level above their grade. And then finally, another challenge as well, I'm just mentioning a few, so I'm not bringing up all of them, of course, but these are some that I think about, is that in most cases, children are learning in school. Then when they leave school and they come home, there's no learning going on. So there's no support to do homework. There's no support to further increase your learning. Whatever is happening within the schools. And then there's literally very little support or even possibilities to study outside of the school. And I think that's also a challenge that we see.
As I mentioned in this experiment, you took on both those challenges of improving learning in school and improving learning out of school as well. Did you have a prior belief about which one of these two dimensions might be more important?
Yeah, so we did this study in Assam in the north of India, and we did it together with Pratham, the largest NGO in the Indian education sector. And as you said, we did one in-school program and an out-of-school program. And what we knew in beforehand was that a very similar in-school pedagogic program had been found to be successful in Uttar Pradesh in 2011. So to be very frank, yes, we expected the in-school program to work in Assam as well. But then on the new out-of-school program, which was the component we were very attracted and interested in as well, where we tried to involve the community in the learning process of the kids. And here, to be frank, we did not expect that program alone to compensate for the gaps in the school system. But we did, and we were very curious about the combination of the two programs. So once you combine a pedagogic intervention or improving in schooling with an out-of-school program, and we did expect the combination to have an impact, even if we didn't expect the study group program by itself in the community to have an impact.
Okay, so let's look at the in-school program first. What did you do to improve children's learning?
The in-school program is a program that many development economists and many people in the education literature probably know about. So this was a program that Pratham, this large NGO in India, has worked with for a long time. And it's based on teaching at the right level. So just to explain, this means that kids are for a short period of time, in our case, it was 30 days, grouped in not classes, but groups that are corresponding to the learning level, rather than the age and the grade that they are supposed to be in. So, you know, a kid in grade 5 who can only do grade 2 level of math would be sitting together with people who are at the same learning level for 30 days. And the goal here is to help students catch up so that when Pratham leaves the schools and this program is over, can move back to their class and are on a new trajectory of learning and maybe be able to cope with what is happening in the schools. In this program, this teaching at the right level program that was implemented in the schools, it was implemented by Pratham volunteers and it was 30 days. So for 30 days, Pratham had volunteers in the schools who grouped the students at learning level and tried to make them jump into a higher learning level. And thereafter, I should say, the schools were left by themselves to continue business as usual.
And the other intervention, the out-of-school, getting the community involved in a kid's learning, that sounds very interesting. What did you do there?
Yeah, so this program was a bit new, or it is a bit new to Pratham as well and a bit new to us. And this was also the program that I was interested in. So my research agenda in general is focused very much on community engaged activities, if I put it like that. Mm-hmm. So this was what we call a community managed out-of-school program. So this was implemented as a program that was supposed to be run by mothers in the village as volunteers. So they weren't paid for this. It was very, how should I put it, light touch, in the sense that Pratham helped these villages to set up the study groups. So they helped them find a volunteer mother and so on who would run these study groups. Then the study groups are exactly what you would think about. It's a group of students. The goal was to have somewhere between 5 to 7 students sitting together after school and doing educational activities with the help of the mother being the volunteer to call for the meeting and so on. And then what Pratham did was that they visited the villages at a monthly basis. But what they literally did at that point was just hand out some teaching material or actually learning material that the mother could use if she wanted in these study groups. And I should also say in these study groups, there were no structure on you're supposed to do this and that. No, they could do homeworks. They could work on the Pratham material or they could do other things. And I also want to say that, you know, a lot of mothers are illiterate. So it's not like the mothers were taking the role of being the teacher. The mother was taking the role as making sure the study groups happened. But when we piloted this project, there was a lot of ongoing learning between the students. So the older students were helping the younger students and the older students were helping each other. So there was this peer group effect within the study groups. And that was the purpose as well, that it might be that mother can't help, but there might be others within the group that can help each other. Yeah, so that was the purpose of this study group activity.
And to be clear on this, day to day in that, there are no teachers, there's no one from the NGO, there's no development economists hanging around. It's entirely organized by the community volunteers.
entirely organized by the community volunteers, initially set up by Pratam, just to say it then. But then, you know, I want to say there was no structure on how many times they were supposed to meet. There was no monitoring. Have you met? There was no checks on do you have enough students in your group? It was supposed to be, which I like as well, a community managed one. So in order for community based activities to happen and to be long lived after the NGO or the development economist or whoever it is disappears, it needs to be a demand that the community feel that they want to work on. So I think this is the right way of forming them in the sense that it should be at their own demand. So whether it happened, how often it happened, that was up to the community.
And to that point, some of these interventions in the past have tended to have quite a large short-term effect, which then later dwindles, goes away, and you can't see it after a little while. How long did you wait to measure the impact of this?
So in this specific case, we actually measured after 15 months, but we are now going back to study the impact of COVID on school children
Well. Yes.
So we will be measuring now again after another 1.5 year. But the impact that we have in our paper and what we're talking about today is after 15 months.
So let's have a look at that impact. If the children just had that intervention in school, just that, how big was the impact for them?
The in-school pedagogic programs, so the teaching at the right level that only happened in the school, we actually didn't find any impact on the children's learning level. And then you remember that I said we did expect an impact. So this was surprising since we knew that this program had been found to work in other places, many other places, but in Uttar Pradesh, it had a randomized controlled trial done in 2011. The fact that we don't find an impact, while the same kind of program it worked in Uttar Pradesh 10 years earlier, is something that we do take serious and try to study. So we've been granted access to data that they used in Uttar Pradesh. And what we try to do is to compare their data to our data. And what we cannot pinpoint exactly why they find an impact and why we don't. But what we can do is to rule out a number of factors that determine this gap. So we know that, for example, the reason why we don't find an impact and they find is not that the kids were at the higher starting level in our areas. It's not that class sizes were different. It's not the number of days the camps were held, because they had a 50-day camp, we had a 30-day camp. But there's so many other factors as well. Time has changed, government systems are different, but it's also the way that the volunteers teach the teaching at the right level, how teachers were involved, and so on. And there's data that we don't have, so we can't pinpoint on that. But the teaching at the right level in Assam by itself, we did not find that to have an impact on the kids' learning.
Looking at the other end, if kids just had the community structure, the community help after school, just that, did that have an effect?
For the study groups only, and now, exactly as you said, it's important to remember that they didn't have any additional impact in the schools. We also here did not find that it worked. And to be frank, I don't think we expected that either, because it was a very light touch. So we didn't expect the mothers to change the level of the kids by themselves. And so that result was maybe less surprising, that the study groups alone didn't have an impact.
So, Martina, the question is, what did work in your experiment?
So what did work, and what we actually in advance also thought would work, and why we were interested in this project, is of course this complementarities between these two programs. Implementing the program jointly, so the schools have this pedagogic teaching at the right level program, and the community have this study groups, that was found to have a positive impact on kids' learning. And we find that children improved test scores by, in economics, we talk about standard deviation. So it increased by 0.10 standard deviations compared to the kids in the control group. But let me translate this a little bit. So what does it mean in terms of percent? Okay, so what it means is that we found a significant increase in the share of kids who are able to achieve the minimum standard. So that's reading and doing math at the grade two level in these two subjects. So we find that children in the treatment group increase their learning in mathematics by 20% and kids in the treatment group increase their language skill by 13% compared to the kids in the control group. That's a pretty much a median impact of a huge set of studies that has been summarized, so 270 different educational programs. So that's a pretty decent effect of an education program.
There's quite a lot of discretion in how this was delivered. So did it matter when and how often the kids engaged with this new type of learning?
That's a very good question. And let me explain you a little bit about the evaluation method. So if you are in the villages, checking how many kids are in the groups, how often do they come, all of a sudden this program becomes a monitoring program. So it's you who are there checking on the kids. And that creates an intervention by itself that mothers and community are seeing. So we did not have a rigorous monitoring system of these study groups because, as I said in the beginning, we wanted it to be a community-based one and motivated by the community. What we can do is we do ask kids how often they went, and we have some data on that. So we do find some suggestive evidence that the more engaged kids learn more. Although it's not perfectly causal, but there is some evidence that the more engaged kids who are going to study groups more often, they also learn more.
If something like this works well, you'd want it for every school in the country, wouldn't you? And then you're talking about millions of children. But of course, the intervention, certainly in school, certainly at the beginning, it takes a lot of resource, doesn't it? So could a policymaker who wanted to scale this up do that?
Here I would say absolutely. And why would I say that? Because thanks to this evaluation and what we've shown, Pratham is now working with this program. And I said Pratham is the largest NGO in India, working across all states. So they are right now implementing this program or running this program with both in-school and out-of-school program as the standard program in many areas in India. So this can and is scaled up by other policymakers. We did a cost-effectiveness analysis. So how effective is this? And what we find is that there are significant synergies in the implementation of these two programs, which makes this combination highly cost-effective. If you would run a similar program to teaching at the right level and then include the study group component, this community component to such a program, the additional cost that this would be is just an additional $1.3 to $1.4 for increasing test scores by 0.1 standard deviations. That's a very cost-effective thing to add on this kind of light touch study group program to an in-school pedagogic program. And that's also important for policy discussions.
I've read a lot of papers, and we've covered quite a few of them on Fox Dev Talks, about interventions in the classroom, in school. They talk about teacher quality and size of classes and things like that. And as you say, some of them have got some pretty good results as well. Not nearly so much about what happens out of school. And there's something very exciting, isn't there, about the idea of this community structure, which could be self-sustaining. Is this maybe something that policymakers have missed and needs more emphasis?
There's a lot of programs and policies that have aimed to look at improving learnings inside of the school, and less attention has been placed on what happens outside of the school. And that's also why me and Andrea were very interested in this program. And I truly believe in a lot of these community-based activities. But I think maybe it hasn't been missed. I think the first obvious thing that we think about when we want to improve learning is to think about what can we fix inside of the schools. I think the next step, can we take maybe learning as a more holistic approach. And this is what Pratham is doing in their work. And that's also what me and Andrea liked a lot, thinking about learning as maybe not just one agent's responsibility, but maybe in a broader perspective. But, you know, I also think there is a lot of challenges when we think about this, because parents are illiterate. So if you think about you should just give them the responsibility and they should handle this. And not only illiterate, they're also time constrained. They're busy. They're trying to get food on the table to get income so the kids can go to school and so on.
Yes.
So I think there's lots to learn here on how can we work on programs outside of the school as complements to the in-school programs and not require too much time commitments from parents, and also not require that the parents should be the teachers. I think this is super interesting, and I think there's plenty of research to continue with. And this program was one first attempt to not take up too much time, to not demand very educated mothers or fathers to do this. But clearly, we have lots to learn, and I think we are in the process. But yes, I like this kind of broader holistic approach on learning, and I think that's a good complement to good in-school learning.
The whole approach is super interesting. Martina, thank you very much for talking to me about it today.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The paper's called Supporting Learning in and Out of School, Experimental Evidence from India. And the authors are Martina Bjorkman-Nyquist and Andrea Guarisu. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. When you do, you can look up all our other episodes on educational reform. In the last few months alone, we've had some very interesting episodes. Role models in Somalia comes to mind, and the use of distance learning in rural Mexico. Two great Vox Dev Talks there. As ever, they are all at voxdev.org, where you can read about the research as well.